Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Sans Pants Radio. Marine biology is not a science. It's quackery.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey guys, you remember that Dracula pitch on Movie Maintenance? Well, we went and turned it into a play.
Starring me.
Well, no, look, Gabe's in the play.
Starring in the play.
Well, no, you're like the fourth, maybe fifth character. You have like one scene.
Two scenes, Carney. Two scenes. Maybe get your head out of your ass and read your own fucking play.
Dracula, Last Voyage of the Demeter opens April 13th. Tickets on sale now.
Starring me.
Welcome to another episode of Movie Maintenance, where some films just need fixing. I'm Gabe.
I'm Sean.
I'm Kathy.
And this week, it's Allied.
What a film.
What a masterpiece.
I had a pleasure watching it. I had a really, really pleasant time.
I had a pleasure being moved by Brad Pitt's incredibly evocative and sensitive performance.
His facial expressions, it's a masterclass in acting that I won't soon forget.
It's got a bit of the latter-day Johnny Depp bloat.
It actually does. So we were kind of watching this just recently, and yeah, we commented on that. Like, Brad Pitt came on, and we were like, oh, like, he does have the Johnny Depp bloat going.
Do you think he's had, like, Botox or something
lately?
What's
the Johnny Depp bloat? I don't...
His face is a bit bloated.
Like, you know how Johnny Depp nowadays, particularly in Fantastic Beasts, like, how he just looks a little bit inflated?
Yeah, I feel like that's, like, age, right? Is that not...
Brad Pitt can't age, can he?
That's what I thought.
He's got to age gracefully on screen. I'm not having a bar of this.
Like, look at, like, you know, you look at the dearly departed John Hurt, for example. He was a skinny man until...
He was a gaunt man
all the way through.
Concrete cheekbones. That's not a problem for Brad Pitt.
Cheekbones.
I mean, as a female, I feel like Brad Pitt's still got it.
Do you feel like Johnny Depp still got it?
No, but he hasn't had it for a long time. Mm. Like, it's all nostalgia finding him attractive.
Since when?
Since, like, the 90s. Borderline, like, at best, early 2000s.
But wasn't his peak attractiveness Pirates of the Caribbean?
For our generation. But
that was really, like, his in terms of him being like a mainstream Hollywood actor, that was it for him, like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, that surely. Was his peak. Yeah. Absolutely. But like there's like in terms of like sex appeal, like Chocolat and...
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, like, nobody saw that.
I saw it like 5 times growing
oh,
up.
Of course you did. I've never looked at Brad Pitt and been like, oh, Brad's aging. Like, and this is the first time I kind of looked at him in a film and I was like, wow, your face is like a bit stiff. Like, you look a bit Botoxed or something. Like,
yeah.
He's just not very expressive.
I wonder, did the shooting of this film happen around the same time that he's like married? Not to get into like gossip bullshit, but that his marriage fell apart.
That's because it's prevailing theory at the moment.
It seems clear in his acting that he's like not engaged at all. I mean, yeah, the rumor was him and
Marion Cotillard. Yeah.
Which is weird because his
is
chemistry.
Is it Cotillard or Cotillard?
I think it's
Cotillard, but I based on a hunch.
No, but it's interesting to watch the film and. I mean, yeah, because, I mean, we've all heard the rumours about him and her, and it's like, but then you watch them on screen together, and it's like, I don't see a shred of chemistry.
No. Not like when you watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and you're like, oh, yeah, no, I can see why you two went off together. Like, there's a lot of chemistry in that film. It's funny because this film so strongly mirrors Mr. and Mrs. Smith, like, conceptually. Like, you know, the
actually,
two
it really
super
does.
Assassins kind of against each other in marriage and all
whereas
of that.
Whereas that was like a fun modern take. This is you know, your old school World War II era sort of thing.
A hell of a lot of fun. I mean, okay,
no.
So...
No, but sometimes it like tries to be, but it's such a weird... Tonally, it's a strange film.
The problem with this film for me, and I think we'll all go around and sort of say what we thought about it. For me, the issue with Allied, there's a lot of issues. I think the biggest issue for me is Brad Pitt and his performance or lack thereof. But the real issue is that like it doesn't seem to know what it wants to be.
Yeah.
Half the time, it's like this sweeping Casablanca-style romance with like, the, you know,
definitely.
The sort of almost soft focus look to it and the beautiful cinematography and the... I mean, it's set in fucking Casablanca for half the film.
Yeah, which they don't mind telling you every 5 minutes.
They refer to it as much as they can.
Yeah.
But then, particularly when they get into London, it becomes like a lot drabber and a lot less visually exciting, apart from the scene where she's giving birth in the Blitz for some reason.
Yeah, that was odd. I'd hate to be an actress and I read the script and it's like birth scene.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's got that amazing line where she grabs him and she's like, this is me before God as I really am. Mm. It's like, and he just kind of looks back without any expression.
Wait, is that in the birth? Was that in the birth scene?
Yeah. She grabs him and she's like, this is who I am before God. And he just kind of, you know, gives his blank, bloaty Brad Pitt circa 2016 face. And that's the extent of that emotional, moving moment in those characters' lives.
Yeah.
But once it gets to London, it's sort of like, and this for me is when the film gets a lot stronger, it kind of veers into very like Hitchcock, tense thriller sort of territory. And for a lot of it, I was really enjoying it. And then it kind of fell apart again in the third act. I guess, just quickly, for those who haven't seen Allied, and I don't blame if you haven't seen Allied, it's about a Canadian spy who gets dropped off in Casablanca in 1942.
Is he Canadian?
He's meant to be Canadian, yeah.
Oh, I just thought American.
Yeah. The reason is the film actually bends over backwards to accommodate the fact that he can A, speak French, but B, can't speak French with a decent accent.
Right.
And I think that's the only reason he's Canadian, because otherwise I can't discern any real need for it.
No.
But basically he gets dropped off. He meets Marion Cotillard, who is a French spy. The two of them assassinate an ambassador together. And then next thing, it cuts forward like a year, they're married, they're in England, and basically it turns out that she may or may not actually be a German spy and he has to figure it out.
Yeah.
I thought there were a lot of good moments. I thought it looked really good. I thought it was a very competently made film. It had some real script issues and performance issues. And I was watching it being like, man, this could have been really, really good.
It could have been really good. The cinematography is beautiful.
Oh, it looks amazing.
It looks fantastic.
Especially that opening sequence. Oh, I was like, shit.
Coming down from the sky.
Yeah, that was really awesome. And like, you know, the sandstorm stuff.
Not so much the
sandstorm. Sex scene was kind of interesting.
Also, that whole scene, I was like, all right, Bradley. Marion's a very attractive woman.
Mm. Yeah.
Like,
try and look interested.
Try
and
look
engaged.
Remotely interested.
See, I felt like that was the best part of his performance was in that scene. Like, I thought he,
he was kissing her without opening his mouth. Like, he just kind of looked like he was banging his face against hers a little bit. Like,
yeah, I don't know. It worked. That was the one scene where I felt the most chemistry between them.
Because they were having sex.
Yeah.
They were pounding into each other like the sand was pounding the windows.
Was it Robert
Zemeckis?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking hell. Well, he's got like getting dead-eyed performances out of actors just down to a T now, doesn't he? He's like, I did it on Polar Express and let's just do it in live action. Like, fucking hell. What was his like research? Hey, Brad Pitt, when you do the film, can you just watch Tom Hanks' performance in Polar Express and just do that? Just be
that.
Dead.
Emulate
be dead
that.
Inside.
Fuck. Maybe it was motion capture. Maybe that's why.
Well, I was going to say, I mean,
yeah, very
brilliant
possibly.
Motion capture.
Maybe that's why Brad
so
Pitt
realistic.
Just
an advancement
right.
in the technology, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it just, you can barely tell.
The intensity performance is just so stark between what she's doing and what Brad Pitt's bringing to
you
the table.
You almost feel like she's annoyed because she's working so hard. She's working like double
She's
time.
One of those like in an acting class and she's like, for fuck's sake, can you like
act? Yeah, he's giving
me
her
something.
Nothing.
Can you feed off something? Like, it's bizarre.
Carrying most of the weight in this film for
and
sure.
And it does make her seem over the top, I think.
But it's strange because when he has, it's so funny, when he has like a scene, like his first scene with Jared Harris, he comes into the room and he's like full of energy. And I'm like, where is this actor really when he's on screen with her? It's so weird.
I think my first response, like walking out of the film, the first thing I tweeted was like, Allied was an exercise in Brad Pitt having chemistry with everybody except for his on-screen wife.
Does he hate Marion Cotillard?
Maybe. Is it like, and this is getting into just gossipy bullshit, but is there like an element of it where it's like they were having an affair and they're like, we better not seem like we have good chemistry? So like the acting performance between them just kind of fucked.
It didn't bother him with Angelina Jolie.
Actually, yeah, he didn't care. Maybe he's learned a bit. I don't know.
Maybe he's grown as a man.
Maybe he has grown as a man. Now when he has affairs with other actresses, he just tries to hide under a shitty performance.
And he ruins films just for it.
Because, I mean, Brad Pitt's been really solid as an actor.
Yeah,
for quite a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Like he used to be like sort of the pretty boy up until about, I know a film you love, Troy.
I do love
it. I don't think he was like a good actor at Troy, but then sort
can't
of
can't fault that film.
From no, like Jesse James onwards,
I'm actually not being sarcastic. I effing love that film.
Yeah, me too. I love it very dearly.
Troy's great. I
cried
watch it again.
When Eric Banner died. Like, I really wept in
Hector.
Yeah,
love it. But no, like Brad Pitt, sort of. If you're looking kind of him and Tom Cruise as like the leading man movie stars of especially the 90s. And Tom Cruise seems to have like clung to his leading man bygone days, whereas Brad Pitt, with the exception of Allied, has been taking like a lot more interesting left of center roles. Like Tom Cruise briefly flirted with it with Collateral, but Brad Pitt was doing, you know, Burn After Reading and Inglourious Basterds, even Fury. Like it was more than just being, you know, the handsome, appealing leading man. He was kind of fucked up in that film.
Yeah,
Tom Cruise hasn't really stepped out of being like the action guy.
This is the closest to really generic territory I think I've seen Brad Pitt. Oh, World War Z, I guess.
I didn't mind World War Z.
But it was fairly generic for
Brad
Pitt.
But also, I mean,
right?
I wonder, because he produced that as well, I wonder how much of that was him trying to be safe.
Yeah.
Because he's producing, he had more to lose in terms of that film being successful.
I quite like his performance in that film.
Yeah, me too.
Despite what people say on the film, and it has
it
a lot of flaws, but I engage with the film. It's not perfect. But yeah, with
but
Allied,
his character I get what Gabe's saying. Like, his character is more kind of generic kind of hero than some of
the other
characters.
I actually can't vouch for what was there. I just haven't seen it. I just saw the trailers. Yeah, you look reasonably like you're... You know, just being a straightforward hero.
To me, like, it's baffling that he's just on like whatever below autopilot for an actor is. That's what he brings
down. It's the worst. I think it's the worst I've ever seen him. Like,
it's
like a stinging indictment on an actor, but like, you are below autopilot.
But even in Troy.
You're not even phoning it in.
He gets a lot of shit for Troy, but like even in Troy, he seems like he's
You can see that he's invested
engaged,
at least.
Yeah. Invested. Like,
he's working something.
Far more than he is in this. So what was, Kathy, what was your impression overall of the film?
Well, it's interesting because you guys were talking about Marion Cotillard. Well, I mean, sorry, I was saying that I felt like she was really carrying him. I got really confused because I wasn't sure whose film it was. I mean, obviously he was being told from his perspective, and certainly by the time we got to the second half, I saw sort of the success of that, I guess, because it was this great thriller and there's this great tension because you don't know what her motivations are, whose side is she really on. But then when you kind of look at the dramatic choices, she makes the majority of them, and also she just is the more compelling performance. So I almost felt like it was her film in at the end of the day. And so that always kind of throws me when you see like The Light Between the Oceans, that funny film that came out recently. That's another example of something being like this guy in the center of this kind of stoic kind of man who can't express his feelings, and then this woman actually propelling the narrative by her choices being the narrative, but it's still being his story, and that always kind of throws me.
Yeah.
But this film was muddier than that one because of that second half. Without that second half, I would have been like, well, that's her film. She's making the choice. She's driving the plot.
Is there an element of it too where her sort of the charisma that she brings to the performance – it's just so far outweighs his that it just seems like she's the one who's steering it.
Like, that's the thing.
Yeah. In saying that, I wasn't fond of her performance.
Really?
I don't really like her in a lot of her roles.
Look, I quite like her, but I do think she felt like she was overplaying in this, but I do wonder how much that was the character. And actually, to a certain extent with Brad Pitt too, because I wonder if it was just a really badly written character who was directed to be very emotionless.
Mm.
And there are lines that suggest that, you know, the bit where like she's unbuttoning her shirt and that really bad line where he's like, we both know people who fucked each other
and then got fucked and fucking died.
It was a really bad line.
But it threw me right out of the movie.
A good actor. No, well, that was the thing, because I was watching it and there was a sort of like, there was a lot of swearing and most of it was from Brad Pitt where he just threw like a fucking in here or in there, and it just, it didn't for me, it didn't feel like tonally it fit in with the film.
Yeah, it was.
And it didn't fit in with his character.
It
jolted me.
It took
either.
Away from like a sweeping romantic feel that yeah. it felt like they were going for. I wasn't sure what they were. But yeah, like, I don't know. I was wondering.
It's those tonal shifts where, like, I don't know what kind of film they were trying to make. And clearly they didn't either.
The problem was that, like, there was this weird thing where it's like, with a lot of him in the first half of the film, I was like, is he trying to be like this stoic, withdrawn man who just can't express emotions properly? And then there was like that moment that I feel like could have been nice in theory where he's, oh, you know, she's watching from the window and he hugs her and then it cuts the window and there's nobody there. And I was like, look, that's not bad in theory, but there's also nothing built up to that. There's no real chemistry between them. There's nothing to make me think this super hardcore assassin spy character is letting down his defenses for this woman. So that's actually kind of my starting point for what I've tried to do to it, which I think we should probably like touch on the third act briefly. I wasn't really a fan of how it ended. I thought it was too easy, which with her killing herself at the end, being like, oh, you know, I'm going to save you and my child and everything. Because I was like, I just hate suicide endings in general. I think it's too easy. And I think it's something people lean on when they're like, oh, this character sacrificed themselves, this character kills himself or whatever.
Suicide endings are a real cop-out.
Yes.
And this I thought was shot terribly in terms of the way it was actually even pieced together. Like, I thought it was really clumsy.
Every suicide ending I see is always one that makes me think, was there a better way to do that? Was there a way to get more drama out of that? Was there a way to, like, because it, to me it's just so easy. Like, you put it, the thing about a film like Allied is that you're putting a character in a really juicy, like what they always talk about at film school, like give your film a really sexy premise. And it is a sexy premise.
Yeah,
it's
for sure.
Guy marries a woman who he meets in the battlefield and it turns out that she may or may not be a spy. What does he do? And of course, the question is, if she is a spy, what the fuck does he do? And to me, the film almost kind of reneges on that promise a little bit by having her kill herself because it takes the choice out of his hands. And if he is the protagonist or the ostensible protagonist in this case, he doesn't make the choice at the end of how to deal with it.
She does.
And she does. And so all of this makes it sound like I'm going to do more with that than I am. But I think I've sort of changed the film thematically. What I've kind of boiled the film down to is that line I really, really like where he says to her something like, oh, you know, that friend of mine said you were beautiful. And she's like, being good at this work isn't very beautiful. And to me, that should be the theme of the story. To me, this story is about two spies / assassins meeting each other. And it's about the relationship between the two of them. And it's about, or what I've done with it is about what it means to be the kind of person who does that sort of work. And it comes down to that doing this sort of work is not very beautiful. And that is sort of the controlling idea of what I've tried to do with Allied. I haven't rewritten it as much as I normally would in a lot of cases. There's a lot that I'm going to keep more or less the same, a lot of the good stuff. But I'll crack into it.
It is kind of like sort of somewhere in the middle there where there is some good stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
there's like a lot that I like.
To me,
about
it's a 3-star film where I'm like, look, it's competently made. I was entertained for a lot of it. Like for a lot of the middle part, I was like, I'm really enjoying it. But, like, I wouldn't be heartily recommending it to anyone.
No.
It's that sort of typical film where, like, a few running repairs would just stop.
Absolutely. It's not a burn it down and start again. It's a few repairs here and there just to a bit of movie maintenance, if you will. Okay, so we're going to open more or less in the same way with, you know, Max floating down from the sky and landing in the desert because, as we said before, I thought it was a great shot, it's really beautiful. Striking opening. And a lot of visuals like that I'd like to retain for the most part. But the first major change is when we see Max's face. So before everyone rolls their eyes, let me explain. I need an actor for this who can mix charm with danger and depth. And Brad Pitt, who I did feel could do this, was clearly not up to the task. So instead I've cast Michael Fassbender and I've fucked off the Canadian aspect and I've made him British.
Hey.
Straight up, British Fassbender, cool. Spy. Could be a cheeky Bond audition, but whatever.
Hey, okay. Nice.
So the start of the film continues to play out more or less the same way. He gets in the car, he gets a fake identity, and then he arrives at the restaurant or bar or whatever it was. Again, this film sort of bent over backwards to excuse Brad Pitt's obvious lack of a French accent. I mean, fuck that movie. That's an easy way out. He's a spy. He should be above that. So instead of all that awkward, oh, my husband is shy and I want to avoid him speaking, so excuse my French accent.
That was French?
It sort of veered towards an attempt, and then I kind of pulled
you
back
from
the precipice.
You should play the character.
And go fuck yourself, Sean Carney. So instead of all of that stuff, which actually, if it was used correctly, could have built more tension than it did.
Yeah.
Because if they were like, we have to avoid him speaking around anyone, because they flirted with it, they had that moment where they were like, oh, this guy's from Paris too. And then they just kind of steer him out of that. And he's
then,
like,
yeah,
oh, good
nothing
save.
Nothing. With it.
But I'm not going to do much with it either.
A film like this lives or dies on the tension.
Exactly.
That
you and moments like that could have created a hell of a lot of tension. In an alternate take that's not as different as mine, you could do more with that. But they didn't, so whatever. So instead of that, Max enters the room and instead of like avoiding speaking or avoiding talking or engaging with anyone, he enters the room and he is charming as hell.
Cool.
He comes in, he's chatting to people, he's cracking jokes, he's smiling, million watt smile, immediately all eyes are on him and his fake wife, who he's never met before, turns around and it's Eva Green.
Okay.
No more Marion Cotillard, Eva Green.
Good. Good choice.
And in this moment, we see just how very professional he and Marion are. Because instead of leaving, finding excuse to leave, these two people who have never met have this immediate chemistry. And together, they are charming everyone with these off-the-cuff stories that they make up between them. If you hadn't seen the first few minutes setting this up, you would totally believe that they're husband and wife who've been together forever. And we just see through that how very, very fucking good at what they do they are. Eventually, you know, they do leave. They're arm in arm. They're waving. They're smiling, laughing at everyone. Everybody's charmed by this, you know, sexy new couple in town. They continue to, like, arm in arm, sort of be all over each other, be very affectionate and warm until they reach the car. The moment the car door closes, all pretense drops. We're looking at two cold, emotionless killing machines.
Cool.
Max is straight away like, all right, give me the details of the case. Marianne equally swiftly briefs him on how they're going to go about killing this ambassador. So a lot of the next part can kind of play out the same way, but I want more tension and more moments of paranoia, which is going to be a big thing through this film, of them wondering, is somebody onto them? And funnily enough, less attempts at connection between them.
Okay, cool.
Because the film struggled here because of the total lack of chemistry between them and Brad Pitt being a block of wood. But I kind of want to double down on this and be like, let's look at these two as two consummate professionals. All that shit with her, like, unbuttoning her shirt to tempt him, that can fuck right off, and so can the unearned dumb car sex scene and all of that shit. And I haven't gone too much detail here, but I want to sort of add a bit more stuff with them having to quickly and quietly maybe take out a few more German soldiers.
Yeah.
Because the first 40 minutes of this film when they're in Casablanca are so languid, and we kind of need to be sold on the idea that the situation in this city is extremely fraught and extremely dangerous.
Yeah. Do you like the scene in the film where he sees that guy?
Yeah, but more of that.
With the bread?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, see, that was like the most tense.
That was a really good, like, brutal scene.
Give me more of that stuff where it's like, no, this city is occupied with Nazi soldiers and we are two allied soldiers in the middle of, you know, the worst possible place. Let's build on that tension. Let's make more of that.
You don't really feel the threat of where they are.
Except for that one
scene. Except for that scene,
But that was the scene that you really felt something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's
do more
with that.
And like when he grabs the bread and you're like, what's he going to do with it?
That was the first time that the movie sort of shocked me, like in my chair a bit, and I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. All right, here we go.
And let's make this oppressive atmosphere of dread hanging over this Nazi-occupied city and these two spies trying to navigate it and survive within it. So through all of this, you know, eventually we build up the big party with the ambassador. Plays out the same way. Max and Marianne infiltrate it. It all starts to go smoothly. The diversion occurs and the attack where they flip over the chair and pull out the guns.
Yep.
Plays out the same way, except the counter-strike against them is much stronger.
Cool.
And Max and Marianne are on their own against a huge security detail.
Just what it should be.
Gunfight breaks out and both these professional killers are forced to act fast and they forget precision in favor of this desperation, despite the fact that the room is still filled with civilians.
Yeah.
So things are going nuts. They're just firing off random shots, just trying to survive. And eventually, by the skin of their teeth, they win. And they go to leave to get the hell out of there. But then something catches Max's eye.
Yep.
Because predictably, there was some collateral. And caught in the crossfire, dressed in a little blood-stained suit, is a little boy.
Oh!
Max is frozen. Marion drags him out of there, but for the first time, they both look shaken and rattled.
Mm.
So we cut to out in the desert, like a similar shot to when they're sitting out there before the car scene. Marion is bustling around the car, doing something with it, and Max is just kind of sitting on the dune, staring out into the morning light. We get the impression they're waiting to be airlifted out of here. Satisfied with whatever she was doing to the car, Marion comes and she sits next to him, and for a moment they're silent. And Max says, I've been doing this for years, and casualties, that's just part of it. Sometimes innocent people die. You don't forget them, but you accept that it has to happen. What makes you good at this job isn't what makes you a good person. It's the ability to push away those emotions and do what has to be done. But never a child.
Oh, boy.
Could have been either of us, Marion says. Or one of them who pulled that trigger. We'll never know. What if we never came here? Max says. Was this so worthwhile? What difference that we could make was worth everything that kid could have grown up to be? Well, you said it yourself, Marion says. We aren't good at this work because we feel or because we question. We do our jobs and we hope that in some small way it will be worth it, that we can make a difference. We are tools that are designed to break, Max. The world we're fighting for is not the world for us to live in. Max looks at her and says, then why are we fighting for it? Marion doesn't have an answer. The plane arrives and together they burn the car and they're carried far away from Casablanca to safety. And inside the plane, Marion looks sideways at Max and then takes his hand.
It's beautiful, Gabe.
Mm.
Thanks, mate. We cut to a year later. And this is more or less the same as the film. Max and Marion have gotten married. We see the photos, maybe a montage. We see the birth of their child, but probably not in the Blitz. And
just in a regular hospital.
But we get rid of that whole dumb scene, like at the end of their infiltration where he was like, come to London. Come to London and be my wife, which just like, we can just sort of like.
It's pretty good.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, it's very wooden, but you know, it was actually
nice tree-like.
True to the film. So I think we can just allude that like they would have had a romance and connected and everything. Sure, yeah. So we don't need to see.
There's enough of that there.
But, exactly. So we jump forward a year and we can see that in photos and maybe a brief montage. And so through this, we as the audience realize that after what happened in Casablanca and after particularly that tiny moment of connection in the middle of this hell, these two broken, dangerous people found something special. And so since then, Max took on an office job, Marion stays at home with their daughter, and what we see of their lives is happy. And maybe Max sits up late at night sometimes with a drink and a cigarette and he wonders if he deserves any of this. But ultimately, he of all people knows that happiness is fleeting and life can turn on you at the drop of a hat. And for now, he has to enjoy something that, as a professional killer, he never thought he would find. Peace.
Cool.
Because, see, what brought Max and Marion together wasn't some feeble attempt at bad chemistry based on unbuttoning shirts and car sex. It was...
Sandstorm car sex.
Yeah.
But no, it was something far more profound and rare than that. It was very simply the fact that because of what they do, they understand each other. They know they've both done terrible things. They know why they had to do them. And so they're right for each other in the way that no normal people could be. But of course, being this film, things soon turn. Just like in the actual movie, Max is called to Frank, his superior's office. And just like in the actual movie, the bombshell is dropped. They suspect Marion of being a German spy who stole the identity of the real Marion and took out the ambassador because he was a dissenter Hitler wanted gone. See, Frank, still played by Jared Harris because he's great.
Cool.
Had been investigating suspected German sleeper agents, and the discovery of one in the area has been narrowed down. Marion seems like the most logical option. So Max is shaken, but the thing is, he's a professional. He doesn't lose his shit like he did in the film. He
just listens. Kicking the little chair away.
No.
Little tantrum.
He just listens. And for a moment, in that office, we see the facade of the content, charming family man drop just as easily as the facade of the rich socialite dropped in Casablanca. Oof. So the plan is the same. Max is given some fake information, and he has to leave it for Marianne to find, then see if she broadcasts it with a clear instruction that if she does, he must execute her personally. But furthermore, just as in the film, Max cannot act any differently or investigate this himself. His job is to make it seem like nothing is amiss. Now, again, I think a lot of this middle section can be kept the same. For me, it was really the best part of the film. It was tense. It kept me guessing. So we can see Max visit his bitter old colleague who knew the real Marianne, only to find that he's blind and he can't identify her. We see Max give Marianne's details to the pilot who goes to France but then is killed. We see Max's doubt, wondering if this is all a test they're putting into place before D-Day to sort of see, to test his mettle. The only real change in this part of the film is that instead of like Max obviously being kind of a bit thrown and shaken and suspicious around Marianne, he just acts no differently towards her whatsoever.
Okay.
He is too professional to let any suspicion slip. Finally, Max does what he does in the film, takes the place of a pilot and sneaks to France to find the man who can identify Marion. Again, this can play out the same way. Max confronts the man. He learns that Marion was a brilliant pianist and he barely gets away with his life. Big action scene because I really liked that. He returns to London and like in the film, he takes Marion to the local pub. And at gunpoint, he forces her to play the piano. Mm. But this time, unlike the film, Marion doesn't react with any fear. She just stares at him, then turns and plays the piano perfectly. And Max, the stoic, deadly assassin, breaks down and cries. Marion walks over and embraces him, holding him close. And he tells her he was so scared. Frank was investigating sleeper agents and she was suspected. He wanted to trust her, but she just holds him and says, it's all right. It's all right. She understands. The next day, Max is called to Frank's office, where he learns that the transmission was never sent. Marianne is innocent. And Max just opens up. He confesses to Frank that he went against his orders trying to find the answer, but the fact is he should have known. He loves his wife. He knows her better than anyone. Of course she was innocent. He never should have doubted her, but the thing is, years as a spy and as an assassin have left him paranoid, unable to trust, seeing duplicity everywhere. And very tired, very weary, very broken, he tells Frank he has to stop now because eventually he won't be able to trust anything he sees. If he can't be sure of his own wife, what can he be sure of? And Frank, despite hearing these troubling reports of insubordination and endangerment of the mission, kind of just accepts it.
Yeah.
And he tells, and in this sort of warm little moment of human connection here, he just tells Max, the fact is most spies have a use-by date. They either die or they burn out or they become so embroiled in the job that there's no shadow of the person left, just the operative. And while the war does need people like that, as his friend, he is glad that Max no longer wants to be one of them. Frank, see, he's an old soldier and he prefers the more straightforward world where you trust your instincts and you believe in your comrades. Where Max failed as a spy, he proved himself as a person. Mm. And to Frank, that's far more important. After all, what are they fighting for if not humanity? So Max goes home. He kisses his daughter. He gets into bed with his wife. And once again, he sleeps easily. And a week later, he receives a phone call. Frank has been assassinated.
Oh.
Somehow, they suspect the Germans realize that he was investigating their sleeper agents. Max is horrified and shaken. He sits down at the kitchen table, everything racing through his head, as Marianne enters and just sits across from him. And for a moment, they just look at each other. I don't know anymore, Max says. I don't know what's real and what isn't. I don't know who I can trust. Marianne says nothing. I want to believe in you, Max says. I want so much to believe that you are who I think you are. But I know I can't prove anything. I know that if you are the sleeper they are looking for, you will have covered every track and hidden every clue. So all that's left for me is to ask and pray that you will give me an honest answer. And still Marianne says nothing. Her face is impassive. Who are you? Max asks. Marianne watches him for a long time and then simply says, I'm your wife. And they sit there in silence, broken only by the ticking of a clock. The end.
That's a good end.
Yeah.
That's the kind of film ending that some people will go, oh, fucking bullshit, oh, and they walk out. Yeah. But, like...
But it keeps you thinking.
Even then, that's a reaction.
Yeah.
As opposed to when you sometimes you watch a film and you come out of it and you're just kind of like, well... Like,
and that's,
you know,
it. Like,
you forget that you've seen a film.
Originally, I was like, okay, well, what if he confronts her and she's like, I'm a spy, but I'm not going to give up my daughter. And I was like, yeah, but then it just kind of... It's still... Somebody has to die and it still explodes in bloodshed and violence and all of that. But then I was like, isn't it so much more interesting if instead we kind of look at the psychological toll of this kind of work?
Yeah.
Like the same thing that brings them together. It's like, you don't know. Is she a spy? Isn't she a spy? He doesn't actually know. And it's like, is it just going through his head? Is he just being paranoid?
Yeah.
And if not, how can he ever prove it?
Yeah.
Because the thing is, if she is that professional, she's not going to let something slip, like playing the piano. She's going to not let any of that bullshit slip.
Yeah.
Like,
he'll never be free of that question.
Exactly.
Ever.
Exactly.
Imagine the weight of that.
Ugh. Because you leave the cinema with that same question, and that's not even your wife, and it would annoy me being like, well, I didn't know. I didn't know whether or not she was or she wasn't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's just me as a third party. Imagine what it would be like to be that person's partner.
Allied as it stood, it ended and I was like, I just felt nothing. Mm. I was like, I just feel nothing. Like, at least like with this, I know this isn't like explosive or violent or anything. It doesn't ratchet up to the same climax. But instead I was like, as I was like writing it just before, I was like, fuck, I really don't know how to end this in a way that's satisfying or interesting or superior to what they did. And I was like, short of them having like a big gunfight or something, I was like,
No, but it's beautiful because it's such like the stakes are just personal. It's not at all like bullshit end of the world stakes.
Yeah,
it's,
I didn't want that.
Yeah, and do you know what?
It's this guy that just doesn't understand. He'll never know.
Yeah,
and
that's it. Oh. Like the stillness of the internal conflict is so much greater than like actual bombs.
Yeah.
Like that ticking clock is like more violent almost because that's the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Gabe,
yeah.
That's the rest of his life, just like
what's he
tormented.
Gonna do?
That's the beauty of this kind of film because you talked about before how it's good to have like a sexy sort of film premise. And there's something so fascinating about like the psychology of being a spy and like imagine like when you watch it and you just imagine the like the different characters that you've had to play in life and then just to have like a romantic sort of drama about two people who both have that life.
Yes.
And just how it affects the relationship. I find it fascinating.
And also like the psychological impacts of war, I guess, and spies about how that's how that is lifelong and how it does kind of change your perspective on humanity and other people around you and how that in itself is the violence is a precipital layer. I think that's, I don't know if that's the right word. But you know what I mean?
Sounds like a thing.
Yeah, it sounds like a word. You know what I mean? It's like the violence is just the top layer of the damage being done. If anything, the violence is the least damaging part of that kind of work.
That's kind of it. And I thought in a certain way, it's like the toll and the suffering that you bring about because of having been involved there, it's not a karma thing or a getting what you deserve thing. Mm. It's what comes with the territory. Like, you will be psychologically fucked up if you choose to take this path.
Yeah.
And that's the cost of the life he chose for himself.
And it begs the question, why did he choose that? It kind of like, do you know what I mean? It kind of comes back to the start almost.
And I know, like, as I was doing it, I was like, I feel like, because what drew me to the film was, okay, and I remember watching the trailer and being like, and even watching the trailer when it's like, oh, she might be a German spy. And I was like, well, if she is a German spy, what the fuck's he going to do? Mm. Like, and that's what's so compelling about this film is like, what's he going to do if she's a spy? And I realized I was writing this. I was like, I mean, it's like, it's almost like when a film is really scaring you and when, you know, there's a monster in the shadows and you're terrified of the monster in the shadows, but the moment you've seen the monster, it's not scary anymore. Like, the moment you've seen it, it's like, okay, cool. Well, now I've seen it. It's the fear of the unknown that makes it interesting. Yeah. And in a film like this, it's like the what will he do is so much more interesting than what he actually can do.
Mm. It actually makes me think of The Hunt, which I know you love, and
that's exactly where I got the ending from.
That's the thing, is like it really doesn't matter what the truth is. As soon as you had that doubt, that question,
it's never going away.
That is the most powerful.
Originally,
thing.
The ending I was going to have with was them like at you know, maybe his sister's party or something, and they're there and they're like laughing and almost mirroring the start where they're like laughing at the party.
Yeah.
And then they're like laughing at a party and they kind of like look across each other and just for a moment it just completely drops.
Oh.
And they're just like staring at each other.
That's chilling.
I thought about that.
I don't know. I kind of like that a lot.
But what you've got already, like...
Oh. The clock, the ticking clock, the audio. Like, I almost That's picture it. The screen goes black and the ticking keeps going.
Yeah, yeah.
For like another 15 just ending seconds.
Ending on that, I'm your wife. And it's just
well, that's it because like it's funny. Like as I was writing,
Eva
this,
Green,
like,
what are you doing to me?
I was gonna have like a lot more after that. Like I was gonna show like the party scene. I was gonna end at that. But then when I wrote, "I'm your wife," I was like, "Oh no, that's the end."
Yeah,
you could have the party scene. And then that's them coming home from the party.
Maybe
you know that conversation you have after you come home from a big night, but and then, you just kind of like lay it on.
I'm your wife. The reason I thought that was like the perfect final line is because I was like, well, actually. It means so much because on the one hand, it's like, yeah, she is his wife. On the other hand, it could mean I'm just your wife. On the other hand, it could mean I'm what you deserve.
Yeah.
I am perfect for you.
I'm your wife.
I'm your wife.
Yeah.
Because you're really no better than me because you trade in just as much duplicity and evil and backstabbing as I ever did. You probably killed that kid in Casablanca. Like,
yeah.
I'm your wife. So, like, there's so many things it could mean.
And you need an actress who can nail that line.
Oh, Eva Green.
Well, Eva Green.
Yeah.
Marion, what's her last name, is like she's Marianne's a really good actress.
Yes.
But no, Eva Green is a really good choice for this.
They're
quite similar.
I feel like Eva Green has a little bit more mystery to it. Just that it's the you
eyes.
Know what I mean?
It's the eyes.
It's 100% the eyes, I think.
It's the fact that she can either be cold, impassive, and enigmatic – or big and over the top and colourful and just goes all out.
Yeah.
And either way it works. Like she's got that real versatility to her.
Marion has a bit of that versatility but not as much, I don't think. I just buy her much more as like a cold character.
Really? See, yeah, I buy her more as the kind of just the charming. I found it harder to find her.
Her charms don't work on me, mate.
Right, they should.
They just don't. I don't know why.
See, when she was the spy, I was like, but of course she softened as soon as she had this baby because for me she just has that warmth to her, whereas Eva Green I can see a lot more duplicity in her.
Yep.
Because she is otherworldly.
Why she works in the role. Bringing in Fassbender is a smart move as well.
I'm not sold on him.
See, I
over Brad Pitt though, surely.
Yeah. The thing is,
did we watch the same film?
Fassbender, I know that we always cast Fassbender and stuff, but like to me it's like Fassbender has that ability to go intense and to kind of give it his all. And if there's one thing Brad Pitt was not giving it in this film, it was his all. So, I mean,
Brad Pitt doesn't really get shouty in films.
Oh, I mean, he didn't. What's in the box?
Not that.
I mean, that's the the beginning of shouty.
It was pointed out the other day too that he often just like relies on this crutch of eating in films.
Yeah, I've seen that. Like, it's like
and
a YouTube
in this film, yeah. those scenes when he's eating, and I feel like Brad Pitt's just like really comfortable eating on screen. Like he thinks it just adds this layer to his character.
But Meryl Streep said that as well, that she loves to be doing things with her hands. Or maybe she hasn't said it. Maybe someone, I think, yeah.
I'm sure it's just an actor thing. Like a lot of actors feel more comfortable when they have like glasses or something to like sink into the character a bit.
I love a really, really almost seemingly miscast person who is just not even close to the correct physique. Like I would be really interested to see Sam Rockwell. Do you guys know Sam Rockwell?
Oh, yeah. He's a good actor.
Yeah, and he's little and he's kind of scrawny, but particularly then he has the spy, that charisma.
It's like, yeah, I mean, if you're imagining a spy.
And
then
he's kind of unassuming, which is kind of what a
spy is. I mean, he floats under the radar.
That's the thing. I don't know. Like, I feel
I've still gone for glamorous and good looking with the two of them, but yeah, you can steer away from that.
I don't know. I like that kind of slightly oddball, but with like stacks of charm.
And he could do the live wire sort of fraying at the edges thing that the character has to do later in the film.
I haven't seen him really good in something for a while.
Yeah, he's gone a bit.
But this could be the film for him.
It could be the film.
That's a good choice, yeah.
I really can't think of like, I mean, I think Fassbender is just like sort of your go-to for that 30s, late 30s.
He's really like
leading man.
At the peak of his powers right now.
Oh, he really absolutely is.
Yeah.
I don't really know who else I would cast in that, like who else really jumps out at me the same way. I mean, maybe Arnie.
Oh, yeah. Give him a scene where he cries.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
Get some Sean Carney tears.
Bloody hell.
Viggo Mortensen.
Oh,
a bit old now, maybe.
Yeah, Viggo Mortensen. He's not, is he?
He's about 60.
He is still got it though.
Does he though? Like, what the hell have you seen him in?
Captain Fantastic.
Okay, besides that, post Lord of the Rings and Hidalgo. What the fuck has he been doing? I used to Promises and stuff like that. I guess all the Cronenberg stuff. But yeah like Gabe said, he's a bit old now.
Was that History of Violence post Lord of the Rings?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. He definitely still had it in that movie. I don't know. I still think he could do it. Hey, I think he looks better than Brad Pitt did in
this film.
Yeah.
No, but Brad Pitt's still like, I don't know. This is the oldest I've seen him look in a long time.
He's got that kind of Tom Cruise thing in this film where he's clearly old but trying to look young.
Yep. 100%. Like with the hair and just the Johnny Depp bloat in the face.
He just looks a bit sort of off stuff. In this film, I think.
Just get Tom Cruise. He's terrific with accents.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could imagine Tom Cruise doing French.
Yeah.
Hey, I would pay to see it.
Well, you know, at least with Tom Cruise, you get 110% every time. We didn't get that from Brad Pitt.
We certainly didn't get that from Brad Pitt.
Are we going to get it again from Brad Pitt? Is this a dip or is this the end?
Well, he has talked about how he doesn't really want to act anymore.
Well, there's your answer.
This feels to me like a latter-day anomaly where he's doing this big studio leading man role that seems to be what he's trying to steer away from.
Mm.
And it's just very telling that this is just not what he wants to be doing now.
Why do you think he did it? Money?
Money. Did he produce it?
Maybe.
I'm assuming he tends to produce pretty much everything he's in these days.
Yeah. I don't actually know, to be honest. I really don't know. He doesn't need the money, unless the divorce with Angelina Jolie was pretty brutal.
I'm pretty sure whatever film we see him in next, he'd probably be terrific in.
You reckon?
Yeah, I'd bet on that.
I could take a wager.
We will wage when the mics are switched off.
And on that note, I've been Gabe.
I've been Sean.
I've been Kat.
And yeah, if you have any ideas about Allied or who you should cast in it, hit us up at sanspenceradio@gmail.com or on Twitter at sanspenceradio or our personal handles. I'm at Goldberg Moser.
I'm at Sidekick of Dowie.
Ugh, I don't have a Twitter.
Get yourself a Twitter,
Atkins.
God, that was an easy sell.
Yeah. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to play game.
And yeah, so shout out to our producer and editor, Sam, and his own podcast, Human/Ordinary. Go check that out. Or our sister show, Vlam the Destler, which chances are you probably know if you're listening to this. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
If you think this show is worth at least $1, why not donate to our Patreon account? Follow the links on our website, sanspantsradio.com.